Hello and welcome to another episode of This Week in Wealth, where we run down the biggest stories in the world of RIAs. I'm Alex Steger, and as ever, I'm joined by Ian Wenick.
Good to be here, as usual.
Fantastic, Ian, and a pod debut for RIA reporter Alec Rich. Alec, welcome. Welcome to the pod.
Thanks. Good to be with you.
Is it as exciting as you thought it was when you were the other side of the studio
course,
door?
Of course, yeah. Pumped to be here.
If not more. I can imagine. Well, fantastic. Thank you both for being here. And as ever, another busy week on the RIA beat. And Ian, I wanted to kick off with what I think might be one of our biggest stories so far this year, albeit only a month and a half in, and that is Charles Schwab making changes to its advisor referral program. Now, you got the scoop here, so what's the skinny?
So the skinny, dirt, scoop, whatever you want to describe it, is that Charles Schwab is going to be raising fees on its Schwab Advisor Network referrals. And so this is one of the most lucrative programs in all of independent wealth management. And to give listeners who might not be as familiar or non-RIA listeners like my wife and her friends some context. So the way that the Schwab Advisor Network works is that any of the Charles Schwab branch offices you see around the country with their fancy little blue logos and their motivational speakers from Chuck on the wall.
That's a little harsh. I mean, they're pretty Main Street, you know. But anyway, yeah. Continue, please.
That's a compliment. It's a compliment. So those branch offices, if they have clients that are too complex for their financial consultants, they
complex sort of financial needs.
Yes, complex planning needs like estate planning, family office services. Schwab will refer those clients out to independent RIAs who custody with Schwab. And the way that it works is that they'll refer the clients to this RIA. And in exchange, the RIA will give Charles Schwab a perpetual referral fee, several basis points, which is based on the amount of assets that the client has, which are custody with Schwab. So historically, for the first $2 million in client assets, the advisor gives Schwab 25 basis points on that client asset. So for example, you know, let's say you're charging 1%.
A quarter of a percent. So if you're the advisor and you're charging 1% on an ongoing basis, a quarter of that will then go to Schwab.
Exactly.
Thanks for the client.
Exactly. So it's a lucrative way of getting new clients, but it's not particularly cheap.
Okay. How many firms approximately are on that program at the moment? And do we have a rough asset figure for?
So right now there are about 140 RIAs on the Schwab platform. That includes household name RIAs.
On the referral program.
Yes. Yep. In SAN. We'll use SAN for the rest of the way. So there's about 140 RAs in SAN, which includes big firms like Creative Planning, Mercer, Wealth Enhancement Group, Lido Advisors. And in total, there's about $280 billion in assets flowing through this network.
Okay. And these changes, now, they're not, when one looks at it in absolute terms, the fee hike is not meaningful. So I think you gave that example of for the first 2 million, you're paying 25 bips, and what will that be when these changes come into effect?
So it's now going to be a 5% increase across the board. So instead of paying the Schwab 25 basis points, you're going to be paying them a little more than 26, like 26 and a quarter. And so on an individual client basis, that doesn't seem like too much. But the analogy I like to make is you've seen Office Space, right?
A long time ago, yeah. I'm interested to hear where this goes. Please crack on.
So we're basically talking about Alex laughing because I'm sure he's an Office Space aficionado. We're talking about the Superman 3 scheme, which is that, you know, Richard Pryor, Superman 3, and then Michael Bolton, everybody in Office Space. They shave tiny bits of percentage points off bank accounts, off paychecks. And that tiny one and a quarter basis point increase, that's not a lot of an individual client, but when you're talking about that applying to $280 billion in assets, well, that's a lot more money for Schwab in the aggregate, similar to the cash sweep programs we've talked about on this podcast before.
Got it. Okay. I think the listeners are still with us too, so this is good. All right. And obviously, like, yeah, the 2 million bracket is the lowest bracket. So in some cases, you know, we're talking quarter bait, 5% raise on a bigger pool of assets as well. So, you know, that's very interesting. And I suppose, what's the rationale for this? Why is Schwab doing this? Because, you know, the appeal to having this program, I guess, initially is this helps bring advisors onto the Schwab platform to custody their assets there. Why make a change? Why now?
So let's zoom out a little bit. And the reality is that being an RA custodian is a very low margin business. Historically, firms like Schwab, Fidelity, they've made money on custody through the spreads on cash before, which we've talked about. The idea that you can pay RA clients a lower rate on their cash, but you can lend it at a higher rate, and they collect that spread. It's very difficult to monetize, but if you're Schwab, you know, this is basically passive income for them, right? The assets are staying on the platform. They're getting a quarter of what the advisor is charging in perpetuity. And yeah, you know, it's almost like the Vegas resort fees. You can turn that dial up just a little bit and the individual customer isn't going to notice, but in the aggregate, it's going to get a lot more cash into Schwab's coffers pretty much effortlessly.
And will the advisors mind particularly? I suppose, obviously, they're still happy to be on that program. It's a fantastic source of referrals for them. It's a fantastic source of organic growth. And my gut read would be, obviously, there are fewer big custodians than there were a few years ago. So they can't really do anything about this. There's nowhere else for them to go.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing is that, and it sounds a little bit cynical, but Schwab benefits from the fact that changing custodians for existing clients is extremely painful. No one wants to repaper their clients. And so if you're Schwab, it's basically, yeah, you know, you can either take this rate, this price increase, or go to another custodian and see how your clients like it. And a lot of times you'll lose clients because they don't want to move their assets from Schwab to Fidelity or to Goldman.
And you as an advisor probably don't want to do that either.
No, you don't want to do it. It's a massive pain. It's a massive pain.
And I guess also we should say in Schwab's defense, it's not as if they're doing this all the time. This is
no.
They haven't done that.
This is their first price increase in 18 years.
Okay, wow.
So you could argue that it's under indexed to inflation.
Fair enough. And we'll move on from this in a minute, but I'm interested to know, this is a relatively significant change. The last significant change to this referral program probably came when? With the merger of TD?
Yeah. So I think it's also worth noting that access to these kinds of programs has shrunk. And so when Schwab acquired TD in 2020, they inherited TD's legacy referral program, which was called Advisor Direct. And so the old SAN and Advisor Direct had about 298 firms combined.
Between the two.
And then Schwab had one big cut, which removed 123 firms, cut it down to 175, and we're at 140 now. So we've seen this slow, steady attrition over time. So the ladder to this organic growth channel, which is so coveted, has been slowly getting pulled up over the last couple of years.
And what other ones are there? Fidelity does have one,
but that's also fairly tight. I think it also has around 130 or so firms. And there's some crossover too. Some of these firms are on both.
Got it. And there's not really anything else that's going to be as good. I know when Robinhood announced their plans for sort of custody business, they talked a lot about referrals. But let's be honest, nothing's going to be anywhere near the size of Schwab and Fidelity.
And the thing is that something like a Robinhood or the online referral platforms like a Smart Asset or Zoe Financial, you know, if you're getting clients from a Schwab branch and they're in that million plus range, they're clients that you can manage profitably. That's the difference, is that it guarantees you clients that can give you some sort of margin.
And of course, you know, just the sheer volume of clients.
Yes, that's also true.
With that, you know, massive brands across the country and everything. Okay, fantastic. Well, look, that's really interesting. Obviously, hugely important for the RA industry, and we'll wait and see what happens there. The changes haven't come in yet, if that's correct. They come in later this year?
Coming in later this year, yes. We don't have a hard date for when they're going to happen, but it's coming this year.
Brilliant. And I guess my last question is, does this signal anything wider happening at Schwab? I mean, we know there was a change in leadership of its sort of RA custody business, and in general, there's been a few sort of changes in personnel there. Is this related, if we even know that, and does it signal anything broader, or is it as you say, just, you know, hey, look, they hadn't adjusted these fees for 18 years, why not?
I think it can be a little bit of both. I mean, you know, to give our co-host here, participant today, Alex, some credit, he wrote about the fact that Schwab was considering this
more
back in November.
More guest than co-host, I would say. It's fine.
Co-participant. You know,
this very much a team member.
This is something that's been on the table for a little bit. And so I don't think it's a tremendous shock that it's coming. I think that maybe we can reassess how leadership is feeling about the RIA channel if we see more of this stuff start to happen in the coming months. But I don't want to jump too far and say that this is the new Schwab CEO, new Schwab Advisor Services head, making their mark.
Got it. Yeah, and Alec, I mean, let's bring you in on this briefly, because you, I think, covered back in November that this was something that was in the pipeline.
Right. Yeah, it had kind of been tipped off at a research summit by, you know, a member of Schwab leadership. And yeah, it seemed like it had been something that was in development for a while. You know, as Ian had mentioned, it had been 18 years since these fees were raised. So I think that it had been in the pipeline and not necessarily something that the new CEO influenced, but definitely, I think, was influenced by the acquisition of TD and trying to roll that up together.
Got it. Yeah. And so in November, they sort of said, this is something they were looking at. But obviously, the scoop that we got this week was that, well, it's happening, and also specifically that 5% figure. So we have a real number on it. Fantastic. Well, look, thank you both for that. And Alec, I'm going to stick with you for a moment then, because I want to talk about deals, which is something that we obviously write about a lot in Citywire RAA and have spoken about a certain amount on this FAIR podcast. But I think often, particularly when we talk about them, we focus on those larger kind of multi-billion dollar firms. We've talked about sovereign wealth funds and massive PE shops buying in. And obviously those deals grab headlines, and that's completely logical. But I suppose the deals that we see more often are for smaller firms, you know, adding $200 million RAA here or $300 million RAA there. And as those are more common, I wanted to dig into one in particular that you wrote about this week, which was a deal done by Merit Financial Advisors for exactly this kind of firm. I think it was a $233 million firm called Hershey Wealth Advisors. So can you explain a little bit more about why that's interesting and sort of some of the trends that speaks to?
That's right. Yeah. So Merit Financial Advisors, which is based in the Atlanta metro area, acquired Hershey Wealth Advisors, and they're based in the eponymous town of the famous candy confectioner. And so this deal was
the barely candy. I'm going to throw that grenade in and walk away. Yeah. Anyway, continue.
And this was the third deal for Merit in the state of Pennsylvania within the last 3 months. And they now have five wealth advisory firms there as part of their larger growth strategy in the state. And yeah, it was interesting to kind of get a look behind the curtain, as you kind of mentioned, at Hershey, because, you know, as obviously we do cover a lot of deals here at CYRIA, but it's not as often that we kind of hear from the owners of these smaller firms who decide to do these deals. And so I spoke with Greg Richards, who was the principal of, and is the principal of Hershey. And he, you know, mentioned to me that, you know, as his firm has grown over the last number of years, he's both had kind of concerns around succession planning, where, you know, some of his customers, his clients were saying, you know, what's going to happen in a couple of years if you're no longer here. And, you know, he was also not really able to provide the level of service that he felt was necessary for some of his clients as well. And that's kind of speaks to a larger trend that I've covered, you know, and our colleagues have covered here as well, in terms of the growing sense by smaller advisory firms that there is, they need to operate with a dual track in mind of, you know, pursuing organic growth, but then also kind of moving inorganically and pursuing deals as well with larger firms.
And with Merit, so you mentioned, and I've forgotten the number here, so forgive me, but there's multiple deals in the sort of in the state of Pennsylvania. Do they just really like the state, or is there, as I suspect there probably is, some sort of strategy around picking up lots of firms in a specific part of the country?
Right. So I also spoke with David Whalen, who was brought in just recently last month, essentially as a deal-making liaison for Merit. And he told me that the firm is trying to, you know, build strategic footholds in areas of the country that aren't necessarily the, you know, the major metro areas, but have kind of a considerable client base made up of folks who are part of either Fortune 500 companies or larger corporations across the country. And Hershey obviously fits the bill of that, you know, given that they kind of derive a lot of their base from some of those employees of Hershey. And so I think it speaks to kind of Merit's pursuit of trying to build what's been classified, I guess, as not an original idea, but a moat in certain areas where, you know, rather than jumping from state to state to state, as we see a lot of some of the larger aggregators trying to do, you're really honing in on a certain area, and in this case, obviously Pennsylvania, and trying to pursue, you know, organic growth that way through the leads that they get from buying some of these smaller shops.
Got it. So sort of targeting these, as you say, sort of not the biggest, largest metro areas, but still finding places where there's effectively pockets of wealth, where there's large corporations, where there will be, you know, well-paid, wealthy clients, and kind of owning that area and to use a sort of Buffettism, building a moat around it. Right. Fantastic. So that, I think that's very interesting, isn't it, in this day and age where we see a lot of these deals, but it's great to find out a little bit more about why they're doing it. And clearly, to your point, there's a lot of advisors probably around that size who are of a certain age looking for some sort of succession plan. And it probably doesn't hurt to sell your business as you're coming up to retirement either. Ian, our deals are...
I mean, what I would think is funny about this is that it's almost a little bit of like a lagging economic indicator, because you have a lot of this wealth concentrated in company towns, which was very much a product of the 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, where we had those large corporate campuses. So it wouldn't shock me if there's an RIA similar to Hershey out in Purchase, New York, where Pepsi's headquartered. I think that I wonder what it's going to be like in 15, 20 years when we think about how many of these big corporate headquarters have moved to just major cities as opposed to the company town model. You know, what is the competition going to be like for acquisitions in those kinds of areas? But to Alex's point, I mean, the wealth in a place like Hershey, that's staying there. That's multi-generational. Those people aren't going anywhere. And so I think if you're a smart RA looking for deals, I mean, I'd look at towns like Hershey, where you know that there's
wealth concentrated. Well, not now, obviously.
Well, not there.
Merit swooped in. I mean, that's happened, yeah.
You never know. Chocolate World does pretty well in terms of annual revenue. There might be some emerging wealth there. But no, if you look for these company towns, I mean, there's definitely lots of people at or near retirement age that have managed the assets for people in those areas. So it's kind of an under-the-radar option.
No, that's, yeah, fantastic. Well, look, I suppose, Ian, this is a harsh note to end on, but, you know, we've just talked about the grand old state of Pennsylvania. And is this harsh to end on this note, Ian? You know, as a massive Giants fan, how did you take the Super Bowl this last week? Are you still in mourning? Have you recovered? Where are we?
Yeah, you shocked me. I didn't know that this was coming.
I've studiously avoided bringing it up all week. Waited until we're live. Well, not live, but we're recording.
Nowhere to go,
yeah.
So I handled this better than Super Bowl 52. 52, my wife had to comfort me after, because I was that upset about the Eagles finally winning the Super Bowl. But then I got over it because I recognized that as much as I hate the Eagles more than just about anything else on earth, I was happy for my personal friends. They did get to see their team win a championship in their lifetime. And for this one, I mean, I had the whole second half to kind of make my peace with it.
Yeah, fair, I think. Okay, well, look, fantastic. I feel terribly, and maybe we'll cut that out. Maybe we'll keep it in.
No, you should keep it. Okay, my friends who will listen to this will get a big laugh out of it.
All right. Well, look, thank you very much, everyone. Thank you, Alec. Fantastic debut. Ian, as ever, I believe you're jetting off now to go to...
I am. I'm heading to Miami to go to participate in the Houlihan Lokey M&A conference.
Fantastic. Well, look out for more coverage of that. And for all the other biggest and breaking news stories, stick with Citywire RAA. And we will be back with another episode of This Week in Wealth next week. Thank you all very much. Goodbye.